Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and every week I'll be interviewing a special guest talking about how to set up a business or how to launch a new product in the local market. You're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Yasmin DiGiorgio from The Grassy Hopper. We'll be discussing the success of The Grassy Hopper. So how did The Grassy Hopper actually come about?
I think a lot of entrepreneurs would say a similar thing, that The Grassy Hopper actually came about because I saw a service that I wasn't getting as a consumer. So I had just changed my diet and I was learning all about how to cook healthy food, because as I started learning more about the way I wanted to eat, I realized I actually didn't know how to cook very. I didn't know how to prepare this kind of food. And I was looking around and saying, well, actually, there aren't many places in Malta that I can eat the way that I wanted to. And I had just come back from traveling and I'd seen all of these amazing cafes in South America and Australia. And it just really inspired me. I said, wow, these places to eat are so inspiring. You go inside and you think, wow, I want to try this, I want to try that, and it's all healthy. So it kind of flipped that normative of eating healthy being a sacrifice. So I think in my young years, I was really against, you know, healthy eating because I just saw it as, it didn't seem very fun.
You could give up cake and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Chocolate. So, yeah, when I discovered actually, wow, we can have eating places that are healthy yet still super inspiring, tasty and fun, I said, this is what we need. This is what we need in Malta. So I actually, before starting The Grassy Hopper, I joined a different project where I learned a little bit about catering. I had no experience before. And then after some time there, I said, okay, now I want to start my own thing. Few coincidences later and The Grassy Hopper was born.
So originally, I believe The Grassy Hopper was a food truck.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I just stumbled into two friends who are selling this kiosk in Brighton, and they said, hey, do you want this kiosk? And I said, actually, maybe I do. It seemed a little bit crazy at the time, but I just took that risk. I said, let's give it a shot, and imported this kiosk from the UK.
But in the time, I'm guessing it took to come down, you'd formulated some ideas for the hopper itself?
Yes, I obviously was already working in a vegetarian cafe, so I already was in the field, I was already getting a lot of ideas and had some feel of what I wanted to create. But actually when the kiosk actually came to Malta, I had to change quite a few things in my business plan. So the idea started before and also after.
So you changed because?
Well, the name Grassy Hopper, the idea was that the kiosk would hop around the
okay.
island. When I first picked up the kiosk, it was a moment I'll never forget. I just looked at it and I said, oh my God, this thing is not going to hop.
Because it was quite a beast.
It was a lot heavier and a lot less maneuverable than you can anticipate from a photo. So I had to tweak my business plan just a little bit.
And did you find that an interesting process, pivoting on the job at that point?
Yes, I mean, you know, it's all throughout the entrepreneurial journey, you have those pivot points and you have to be flexible as a startup. So it was the first of many, but it was, I guess, the most iconic for me because it always stays in my memory as such a pivot.
But no Grassy Hopper.
It's not going to hop.
What else do you wish you'd done differently? Obviously, you didn't know about the complexity or the cumbersomeness of the hopper itself. But what else do you wish you'd done differently in hindsight?
I think it's a difficult question to answer because by definition, a startup has to involve failure. I think it's such a steep learning curve. And I was listening to a podcast last week where they were just talking about redefining the language of startup, where actually the whole startup journey is about learning. It is about failing. It is about discovering actually your product and the thing you want to share. So I'm not sure if I would do anything differently because those lessons actually have really informed me and have made me into the situation where I can now run my business definitely a lot better than I could 2 years ago. So,
and indeed, in the last 2 years, you've opened up more outlets.
Yes.
And so tell us a bit more about your other outlets that you have.
Well, it's kind of funny. I feel like the Grassy Hopper has its own ideas of how it wants to grow, and I'm just kind of holding along for the ride. So obviously every new outlet you open is more responsibility and it's a little bit more stress. But when you see people having the experience that they have with the food and the demand that there is and the need that there is for this kind of food, when certain opportunities come, you just can't really say no. So it just, you know, you kind of get pulled along with this thing. But I'm very happy to go along with that.
So currently you have a Gezira?
Yes, so we have a cafe in Gezira, another cafe in Valletta, and we've just opened a small healthy cake shop.
Tell us more about healthy cakes, please.
It's actually really amazing because my own healthy food journey started with chocolate. Okay. So I've come full circle back to chocolate. And the discovery that cacao is one of the healthiest foods on the planet, for me, was like, wow, I've struck gold in my own personal life. It's, yes, I can eat chocolate and it's healthy. I mean, that's just, everybody has to love that. We're all chocolate lovers, I think. So I started learning about cacao 4 or 5 years ago when I changed my diet. I was experimenting at home. I was making raw chocolate. And then the Grasshopper happened, and we have been making some healthy desserts, but we just decided to take it a step further. So the Grasshopper is a lunchtime place. People come with a certain budget that they want to spend on their lunch. And, you know, some desserts with really high quality ingredients can cost as much as a salad, as a whole meal, just because of the quality of the ingredients. So we decided to create a brand that would just have a different communication strategy and a different market strategy. And that strategy is just based around the absolute best chocolate and the best coconut oil and the best cacao butter, all the best superfoods in one healthy cake.
So it's good for you cake.
It's good for you cake.
Really is good for you.
Good
cake.
For you chocolate.
So where can I buy good for you cake?
So the shop's in Valletta. It's in Old Theatre Street. It was actually it's in the old Grasshopper shop.
Okay.
So the Grasshopper has moved to a new location, to a little bit of a bigger space, and the old shop is now the Healthy Cake Factory.
Is that what it's called?
You can smell it as you walk down the street. You're like, oh,
How wonderful. I'm going to be rushing there straight after the show. While we're talking about cake, has there been any sticky moments that you've had at all in your sort of journey over the last 2 or 3 years?
Again, definitely. I think it just comes with the territory of startup and entrepreneurship. There are always going to be moments where you just get mega challenged and you're in a situation where you have to think on your feet and come up with solutions, and that's very much a part of the makeup of startups.
And was there anything at all that gave you sort of sleepless nights, made you think, why am I doing this? Okay, there's cake, but why am I doing this?
Definitely. I mean, I still to this day, you know, have sleepless nights from a little bit of stress and obviously the responsibility. We've got over 20 employees now, so the company is big, and that is obviously a responsibility for me. So there are definitely nights where the pressure takes its toll. But I think it's also about managing that. That has really taught me also to focus on my own wellness as a person. I'm in the wellness industry. My cafe is all about healthy food, but it's very easy to let the stress come in the way of your health. So as an entrepreneur, I think a lot of people go through this. You hear many entrepreneurs who work long hours. They don't necessarily take lunch. They're not really investing time into their own personal health. And I think the stress of entrepreneurship and the sticky moments have really forced me to be very disciplined with my own health care.
So actually to take it for what it is at the end of the day, yes, it's work, but you have to take it.
Definitely. I mean, if I'm not well and I'm in the wellness industry, then that's going to be a little bit of a problem. So I've had to, you know, I'm just the same as anybody else who struggles with being healthy and discipline and our own health routines, you know, sleeping early, drinking enough water. My New Year's resolution was to have a smoothie before I go to work, so I leave home, because it's easy to get caught up in work and tasks take over or problem solving. So yeah, I think that the sticky moments in entrepreneurship have just brought me back to that thing of you have to have enough energy to manage your business. You have to be well. You can't be stressed and anxious, or you're not going to take the right decisions. And sometimes it's a little bit scary because you have to almost take that time and energy out of your business, focus on yourself. But then in the long term, obviously, the business is going to get the benefit of that.
And you've had such rapid growth. You're saying you already have 20 employees. How do you manage that? You're quite young yourself. How do you manage 20 employees?
Well, it has its challenges, of course, and I've had to learn how to do that, how to be more organized, and how to create systems within the business to be efficient with our time and to get the support that I need. That has been definitely one of my lessons, because I'm quite a doer and I like getting things done. But sometimes you just really need to learn to not do yourself and create systems where things get done and allow other people to step up and take responsibility as well. So that's something that I've had to learn along the way.
And how have you learned all of these skills?
Well, I've learned obviously through experience. I also have to credit my dad, because my dad being an entrepreneur, I always grew up hearing his stories of how he managed problems and he grew his business from one man to, you know, to many employees. So that has definitely influenced me. But I think also being open to always learning is a real key quality that I see in many successful entrepreneurs, that humility to just be always learning. I'm a learning addict. I'm always listening to podcasts. I read around a book every week. So I'm always kind of absorbing and getting tips from the multitude of information that we have in access at this point in time.
And you're finding that delegating and giving people responsibility is takes some weight off your shoulders and also makes your employees happy as well?
Definitely. I think this is actually a really beautiful part of entrepreneurship, because when you learn to do that, you give space for other people to really step into their potential. So we hear a lot about micromanaging and entrepreneurs who can't let go of control. And I understand it's hard to let go of control, because people are going to make mistakes. And, you know, sometimes you feel like you could do a better job. But at the end of the day, that's a really, really unhealthy way to run a business. If you want to be more than 1, 2, 3 people, if you want to grow to 20, 50, 100 employees, 1,000 employees, then you really have to learn to delegate. And for me, it's very, very fulfilling, because when I see the rest of my team making their mistakes, growing as people, expanding their comfort zones, and just becoming better and more confident in their job through those mistakes, just like I did, I think that's really, really fulfilling. And I feel like it gives me so much back. For every mistake that they make and they grow, then I also get people around me who are stepping into the real full capacity.
And giving you more time to create the next thing, I'm sure.
Yes, and giving me time to take time off and follow my own personal interests, which that also has to come in at some point.
So what other strategies do you have that you would pass on to budding entrepreneurs? Not necessarily people wanting to own cafes or food establishments, but what are the sort of lessons have you learned from these books and these podcasts, that maybe your top 4 or 5 lessons that you really want to share with the listeners?
I like to view entrepreneurship through 2 lenses. So you have the external stuff and then you've got the internal stuff. So the external is all the things you can measure and manage, you know, learning about marketing, learning about HR, having mentors who can help you and guide you in the ins and outs of business. And there are many. But then there's also the internal aspect of entrepreneurship, which is how you deal with failure, how you are in relationship with others, how you deal with setbacks. And I think these are the less tangible things, which is almost harder to even talk and learn about because they're not so quantifiable. But I think for me, I see the interior qualities of an entrepreneur as quite a defining factor in whether they succeed or not. So for me, I would really encourage people to work on these kind of skills, a more emotional maturity, and emotional mastery kind of skills. So you have people like Robin Sharma, the author of The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, which is a fantastic book. And he talks in that, and he talks a lot in all of his work about the inner skills that you need to develop to be a good leader. And a lot of these are, you know, how to face fears, how to have difficult conversations. I think that's, you know, a skill you don't necessarily get taught in economics and management at university, but if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you have to learn how to have difficult conversations.
And that could be something with an unruly member of staff, a bank manager, the tax man, whatever.
Totally. It's just with everyone, you know, with your team members, with your staff, with yourself.
Yeah, but that must be true. It must be quite hard, like you said earlier, to let go of the reins and to not be arrogant if your idea is very successful, and to be able to go with the flow a bit. Are there any aspects of that that you found really challenging, or your team have stepped up to the mark for you and enabled you?
Yeah, well, I think obviously I have certain, like I said, learning strategies and tools that help me in my own life to learn these kind of lessons. But as you said, I think the openness and the humility and that kind of student lens is the prerequisite, because as soon as you come at life through that lens, then the lessons are just there to be learnt. Whereas if you kind of feel like you know it all, or you're scared to admit your own failings, then you're always going to be kind of closing your eyes to these lessons. And generally, the longer you don't want to see them for, then the louder they have to knock, till eventually they need to push you over for you to learn that lesson. So, like I said, for me, I really take time to reflect on myself, and I really sort of think very carefully about the relationships, how I speak to people, how, you know, it's very easy to blame others around you for things going wrong or for anything. And I think having the strength and the humility to really take it back to the self and be very responsible is difficult, but it's super empowering, because as soon as you can take responsibility for something, then you can change it. Whereas if you're kind of like, oh, it's not my fault, or it's that, or, you know, anything from like, it's that person's fault, or it's the government's fault, or it's legislation, or it's the bank, or it's so easy. I find myself on a daily basis falling into little ways to blame others around me. It's very convenient. But at the end of the day, it's not going to help you to really be at your best. It's not going to help you to be empowered to make the changes that you need to make. And I think entrepreneurship is such a tool for personal transformation, and for me, that's been my experience. And it's exactly for this reason that there's no one above you to blame.
That's true. The butt stops with
the
you.
The butt stops with you. So if you're working for someone else, you can always blame your boss or his decision or that. Or, but when it's just you, at the end of the day, if you don't take responsibility and make the necessary changes, you will go bankrupt. Your business will close down. So it's challenging, but at the same time, it's a big opportunity to really grow and develop.
And so from the lessons that you've learned, which has been the hardest?
I think I'm still learning them, to be honest. But I think so far it would be learning how to manage the pressure. So I sometimes like to ask myself the question, would you act differently on a daily basis if you had no pressure? So, you know, without the pressure, you might just be a little bit more at ease, a little bit more relaxed. You might be a little bit more inspired. Your pressure tends to close down your creativity and make you be a little bit more reactionary. So my aim is to run my business with that ease and learn how to make peace with the pressure and not let it impact me in a negative way. But it's something that I'm still dancing with. It's something that I'm still learning and still looking for other techniques that can help me. Definitely made some progress. And obviously, just being in the arena, getting through every other challenge, and, you know, maybe 1 month you have a tight cash flow situation, it's a little bit stressful, but you, every time you come through them, so you accumulate this past experience also of success, and that helps you to manage that pressure. So I think that's definitely one of my top challenges.
And do you see the end to that financial pressure with the success that you're having in this next year? Or will
I'm
you
not
be
sure
then be going and opening another outlet and then...
That's the worry with me, because I have so many ideas that every time there's some spare cash flow in the business, I always think of something else that I want to create. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Obviously, you need to secure the business for the future. But I think it's really beautiful to think of success financially as a way to have more impact. So I was actually, funnily enough, asking myself this question this very morning. I always meditate before I start my day, and I was just thinking that to myself. I was just saying, because the mind, we always sort of, I think, a way of coping with our current challenges. We always say, like, okay, next year it will be easier, or, you know, in 3 years' time it won't be like this. And I thought to myself, well, what if it is? And I asked it to sort of not in a negative way, but like, okay, we can also just learn how to live with this and carry this with a lightness and with a joy that doesn't have to have this stressful aspect to it. So this is why I'm very focused on the interior world as opposed to the exterior, which is a strength, but, you know, you need both, obviously, to run a business.
But do you think if you stopped creating, if you didn't take advantage of those opportunities and your ideas, that actually that would make you more frustrated than financial pressure can make you?
I think so. And I really see my business as a way to serve. So if you stop wanting to put yourself out there to fulfill your visions and to do the things that you feel need to be done, then then I'm not really sure that that's success either.
No, because I suppose this in your closes down the whole part of being an entrepreneur.
Exactly. I mean, I always tell myself, you know, my success, I try to measure my success not on the numbers in my bank account, but on the impact that I'm having. So as soon as you stop having an impact, I think that's where the financial success just doesn't really have the same meaning.
And how do you see your impact? Is it on a cafe full of people? Is it opening a new business? How do you see you impacting your local community?
So it's many layers. Obviously, there's the first layer, which the Grasshopper has just made it easier for people to find healthy options out and about, definitely in the area of Gżira and Valletta. And I'm very lucky because I have made connections with a lot of my clients, and they give me good feedback, and that obviously really makes me feel like, wow, okay, what I'm doing is worthwhile. And especially have people who have just had some sort of illness, and they just come into the cafe and they're like, oh my God, thank God there's somewhere that I can eat without worrying. So that obviously makes me feel really good. But I think also just our environmental philosophy and I have a big vision of running the business consciously. So it's not just about the food, but it's also just about the way we interact as a team, the way our team speak to our customers. I really feel that business needs to be a force for change. So we put a lot of time and energy into our company culture. And I feel that is something that also has an impact. So I see a lot of my colleagues and team members growing, having positive work experiences, gaining more confidence in themselves, changing their paradigm also of what it is to work in a business. Because I find many people who come to work at the Grasshopper have had past experiences of being exploited in the workplace, of their creativity being stifled, of them not being taken seriously, of many negative aspects which don't necessarily bring out their best. So I like to think that I have a positive impact on creating a work environment where people are supported to thrive.
And how do you actually manage that with 20 employees and, you know, bustling cafes? How do you take time to be able to individualize your attention to your team members?
Well, each person that joins the team actually gets a session with a life coach. So they get a one-on-one session where they can just talk about anything. Doesn't need to be work-related at all. It's just a check-in with them and just giving them a time to express themselves and really go within and see what they want. They also answer three questions every year. We set as a team, we set our intentions for the coming year. So the first question is, what would you like to manifest in your life over the coming year?
Okay.
So it could be anything. It could be a new house. It could be a car. It could be going to the World Cup final. We had a successful intention, one of our guys in the first year. Then we have the second one, which is, what skills do you want to learn over this next year? And the third one is, how would you like to contribute to the greater world? So I like to get people thinking about what matters to them and giving them the support to make their work meaningful. And then on top of that, we have four times a year, we close all of our outlets and we do a whole day workshop. So we had our last one on Christmas Eve. And in these sessions, we are giving people the tools to discover themselves and discover their own potential, and also how to relate to each other in a healthy way, how to inspire our customers also. So little things, but actually they create a big impact. So we do meditation in our workshops. We have certain connection exercises. So we have one very powerful exercise, which might sound a bit out there, but if you are involved in a service industry, I think this is just priceless, where we basically get people to stand in two rows, with each with a partner facing another of their colleagues. And they just have to hold eye contact for a few minutes. And while they're holding eye contact, we'll ask them a question. So we'll say, line A, tell line B something you always wanted to tell them, or what the first thought that comes into your mind. And this exercise is mind-blowing. It's actually really hard for us to hold eye contact with each other for an extended period of time. It actually brings up quite a lot of discomfort and a little bit of awkwardness, because you're just kind of staring at someone's
eyes. Normally do,
yes, totally. And I've found little exercises like that, we obviously do many of them, just really bring a lot of connection between people. And they learn as well through this about what makes it hard for us to connect with others? And then we take that back into a customer service lens and we say, okay, so how are we then taking this into connection with our customers? Are we connecting with our customers? Are we giving them the time and the care, or are we just, you know, not really paying any attention? Uh-huh. And then also how to deal with customers who are maybe being a bit difficult or, you know, a little bit aggressive, which also happens. So I think these things, you know, we try to create a culture which is based on things like responsibility, connection, communication. I'm not going to lie, it's hard work to create a culture like this. But for me, the reward of that and the impact that that has on the team as individuals getting to experience that and then them transferring that forward to the customers, I think is a very, very beautiful thing.
And obviously you can't be in all of your outlets at once. So knowing that everyone's been through the same training and has the same beliefs and the same system means that you can step away and relax and know that your brand is
exactly
actually being carried forward exactly as you wish it to be.
Definitely. I like this quote which says, you know, if you take care of your team, they will take care of your customers. And I think that's a really beautiful thing, because we often hear the customer comes first, and I'm all for the customer, obviously, is the bread and butter, but if you treat your
wholemeal bread and
wholemeal bread and so obviously if you have that care with your team and you genuinely care for them and are trying to support them, then they're going to pass that on to your customers. And I think that's when we can really say the business has a very wholesome company culture.
Excellent. So I'd really like to thank Yasmin De Giorgio of The Grassy Hopper for joining us this week. It's actually the last episode of Entrepreneur Clinic here on Campus FM. You will be able to download all of the episodes that we've had, all 17, from Campus FM's website and through links on our Facebook page too. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you once again, Yasmin.
Thank you.